welcome to The Street End. This is your one-stop shop for all the news from Everton Football Club. From the writers of www.thestreetend.com. Every week, Chris and myself, Andy, will get together and have a chat about everything that's happening at Everton Football Club. Unfortunately, we've had a few technical difficulties recently, so we couldn't record one. Probably after, in the worst week you could have it, when we had the derby. So, we're back together now, and we're able to sort things out. So, without further ado, here's Chris. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, you?
Yeah, not too bad. Getting there slowly, which is what you might say about Everton at the moment, getting there very, very slowly. So, yeah, all good. Lots to get through today, mate. I guess it'd be a bit remiss of us to not talk about the derby before we get into the Swansea game. So, yeah, is there anything you wanna bring up after the derby, mate? How are you feeling about it?
Some of the points I wanted to talk about in the derby was just about how friendly it was. You know, it's not your usual derby no more, is it? It's very, you know, there's not many full-blooded challenges, and I think it's lost that little bit of a spark.
Yeah, do you think that's because of all the foreign players that's in the derby nowadays, or?
Yeah, I think you still need those, you know, couple of Scousers in there to know what the derby means. I know, like, Jags was getting in, stuck in there. And to be fair, near the end, Keane, there was a great double challenge from Keane that were, like, full-blooded challenges in their half, who I actually thought Keane had a really good game last week, as did Jags. They looked assured in defence.
Yeah, he certainly had his, I think it was probably his best game in an Everton shirt, or certainly since the start of the season anyway. So it was promising from Michael Keane, and it was, I think he's at his best when he's aggressive, and we need to see a bit more of that aggression about it from him as we go forward, because he's a big lad, he's an imposing lad, he's not slow, he's not the fastest, but he's not slow, and if he actually starts throwing himself about and using his body a little bit more, he can be a weapon at both ends of the pitch. And you could see Allardyce was in both games, actually, has started to use him a little bit further forward, unsurprisingly, because Allardyce does like a good hoof up front, doesn't he? So,
yeah. Yes, he does.
Yeah. But I think Rooney and Davis, you know, both being Scousers, Davis did his usual throw himself about a bit, and he was fairly strong in the tackle, but again, the midfield was just passed by, wasn't it?
I think we need more legs in there. You know, when you've got Rooney in that midfield, you can't have Schneidlin with him, because I think you need, like, Davies and Gay, because they can do his leg work then, because Rooney can't get round the pitch. And an example from the derby was, you know, Rooney and Milner are similar ages. And if you look at the distance Rooney covered, and then you look at the distance Milner covered in the 16 minutes he was on the pitch, it's worlds apart. You know, Milner was everywhere, and, you know, I'd argue that Rooney has far more ability than Milner ever had. But Milner's just looked after himself a lot better, and it's shown. And for 60 minutes, Milner was the best player on the pitch. I hate to say that, but he was. As soon as he went off, that's when we started to pick up a little bit more.
Yeah, he was all over the show, wasn't he? He was a little bit different to David Silva, but in the same sort of thing. They're both around the same age as Wayne Rooney, and they both dominated the game for their sides when they were on the pitch at Goodison. And they both looked like they had the legs on Rooney. Yesterday, in the Swansea game, Rooney was... They played Schneiderlin in that holding role again, and he played Gay as well. So he had a little bit of legs alongside him, but with Schneiderlin there, he was able to play a little bit further forward, but also because we were playing Swansea. But even then, Swansea's midfield, they were athletically superior, and we start dropping off because we haven't got control over midfield. So in the second half, we were defending on the edge of our own area again. And that's why they just dominated the game. So is Rooney still able to do it in the big games against your Liverpools, your Manchester Cities, your Uniteds? At the start of the season, you'd have said yes. I mean, we played against City at their place, and he was the best player in a purple shirt. Him and Calvert-Lewin played very well together. But Rooney was playing further forward in that advanced position. Well, Allardyce talked about in his press conference the other day that he wants to see Rooney get him forward further. And we haven't seen for a while him bursting into the box and arriving late. And that's, if Rooney's going to stay there, what we need to do is be able to put him in a position where he can spray the ball around and then arrive late into the box, because that's where he'll do the most damage for Everton. We haven't got that at the moment. Gay is all over the park, but he's physically not the strongest. Schneiderlin has improved over the last two games. He played well in the derby and looked more like his old self. And also, you know, Davis at the moment, he's lacking the composure on the ball after a very, very difficult season. But again, no criticism of Tom Davis. He's still 19, so he's learning the game. So we need to be able, if Rooney's going to play in that midfield position, he needs to be playing in a sort of number eight, coming from deep, sort of spray the ball around and arriving late. And that's the way we're going to use him best. But can he do it against City and Liverpool? What do you reckon, Chris?
I personally think Rooney should be coming off the bench and causing an impact. I don't think he's got it in him to do, you know, start the game and impose himself on the game straight away, especially against the big teams, because the big teams have a lot of players who've got great engines and get about on the park. And we can't afford to have someone like basically carrying a player in terms of position. You know, if you've got three central midfielders who are athletic and put themselves about and press these big teams, because that's what we need to do against them, then that gives us more of a chance. But whereas Rooney, he can't carry on pressing players and, you know, bursting towards them. And I think we need that energy in the midfield. And I don't think Rooney can give us that at the minute. I personally would bring him off the bench.
Yeah, the midfield has been a big problem for Everton all season. And losing James McCarthy really didn't help either. Not that he's been somebody you could actually count on over the last few years with his injury record, unfortunately. But the difference he makes on the park, it really does go to show what sort of player we need. I mean, you look at Tottenham's midfield there. People like Victor Wanyama and Moussa Sissoko really help give Tottenham the ability to play, because they cover ground in midfield and dominate physically. Wayne Rooney, he played up, I don't know, yesterday, he was playing in that more sort of number eight-ish role with Schneiderlin just sitting, and Rooney was trying to get forward a little bit more. He was sort of in that, what I'd call, more in the position that Ross Barkley occupied at the end of his time at Everton, and I don't mean the treatment table. He was on the edge of the area. He had a shot from about 25, 30 yards out, which he scuffed, unfortunately, and it was made for Rooney. So they're the sort of positions that you want Rooney to be in a position where he can hit it from there or even just arrive late. There's no coincidence his best game of the season was against West Ham at home, and he arrived late for a goal. He'd done that a couple of times this season, but he hasn't done it for a while. The jury is out at the end of the day on whether he can still do it. But there's no doubt about that he still needs to be a part of the squad at the end of the day. We do need Wayne Rooney there. And like you say, coming off the bench, he can still unlock a defence. But you look at the rest of that sort of midfield. I think a big issue as well is Yannick Bolasie. He was very poor in the Derby match. And to be fair, he wasn't that much better against Swansea either. He's such a frustrating player because he's got a bag of tricks, but sometimes he doesn't even know what his legs are doing himself. And he doesn't always make the right decision, does he, mate?
No, he doesn't. And, you know, talking about the Derby, I'd have took him off after about 15 minutes, 20 minutes, before he had that effort that was a great effort that Karius just about got his fingertips to turn it around the post. But right from the off, Bolasie was just non-existent in the game. He, you know, and it goes back to like maybe not knowing what it means to the fans. You should, this is the Derby, you should know that this is like, you know, the one game where you want to win because you want the bragging rights over your rivals. And at times he was just jogging around and, you know, no effort. I can understand if you're not getting the ball, you can't, you know, make those attacking runs and that. But when you're off the ball, you can still make effort, close players down, you know, track back. He was just, you know, Klein was driving him back rather than him pushing Klein back.
Yeah.
I think Bolasie should have, you know, just been trying to stand, you know, an extra 5-10 yards further forward when we had the ball, just to push Klein further back.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was the same on the other side as well with Walcott. Walcott, at the end of the day, worked so hard. He was tracking back all the time, and that's what the managers asked him to do. At the end of the day, he's dropping back. He actually did it against Swansea as well. But it goes back to that issue in midfield as well, of us not being able to find these players in these attacking positions. Bolasie actually comes a bit deeper to collect the ball, and then we'll try and dribble past people. But when you've got two or three people there, you're not going to beat them a lot of the time. He's quick. He was quick. But we've yet to see that lightning pace that he used to have before his injury. So it's questionable about whether we'll see that again this season, or indeed again. He's 29. But the main thing is, we at the moment are attacking either through both flanks with overlaps from Seamus Coleman, or we're putting the ball on the edge of the area, but we're trying to stick it up towards Cenk Tosun, who is starting to look like a Niasse with a slighter, better touch in terms of, there's a lot of effort from him. And he can finish in the area, but outside the area, he's struggling to actually hold the ball up still. And whilst there's no one can doubt his commitment, he's isolated. So the whole problem that we have at Everton is based on the midfield at the end of the day. The defence, because the midfield can't cover that much ground, the defence has to sit back a little bit, especially because Michael Keane's not slow, but he's not the fastest either. Phil Jagielka's getting on. He's still probably the quickest player that we've got at the club, apart from maybe Walcott. So Leighton Baines is 33 now, so he plays deep now at the end of the day. So we as a side, it's just, it's this disjointed midfield that we've had all season. and it's leaving us basically looking like a side who doesn't really know each other. So with that said, would you have played any different in the derby match itself? Because for me, we sat back in a derby for 70 minutes at home and let them attack us. 70 minutes.
Yeah, I'd have certainly played different. One of the things with me is, you know, this season's over for us now. We're not getting Europa League. I don't want Europa League anyway, because I think it's just a bit of a distraction at the minute when this summer is a massive project for just rebuilding the squad, which I'm sure we'll get onto that later on. But, you know, there's nothing to play for. We're safe. We're not going down. And we're not getting Europa League. Yeah, you want to finish as far up in the table as you can. But for me, I reckon we're probably in the position we're going to finish. I can't see us catching Leicester. Burnley definitely can't see us catching. But I would do...
behind Leicester. But the scary thing is that Newcastle could actually go ahead of us if they win their two games in hand.
Yep.
And that's our next opponent.
Yeah, that's a big game there, but they're right in form, aren't they? And we're struggling. But this is the perfect opportunity now. We've got nothing major to play for, except for a slightly higher league position. We've got some good youth players there that, you know, the managers always say, you know, they need the experience before they can play, etc. Well, we've got the perfect opportunity now to get five or six of the youth players into the squad, into the starting lineup, and give them that experience. My standout one, well, there's two. One's in Germany in playing for Leipzig, which we should never have done. But my standout one that's at the club at the minute is Vlasic. Why is he not getting the game? I know he came on for, what, the 87th minute against Swansea?
Yeah.
You know, that's not experience in the Premier League. That's, you know, 6 minutes. What's six or 7 minutes worth of game time? It takes you 10 minutes to get into the speed of the game when you come off the bench usually. So he's not had enough time to impose himself. I would like to see him start Vlasic, whether you start him out wide or you start him through the middle. I know we were playing poor early in the season, but there was a game, I think it was against Southampton, where Koeman played him as like a centre mid. And he puts himself about. For his size, he's quite strong and, you know, he can hold a man off. But the best thing about him is you get the ball and you try and drive it forward. That's what he wanted to do. Now, I'd love to see Vlasic in the team, you know, give Holgate some more games. Bring your youthful players into the squad. Is Holgate injured? Right, okay. Fair enough.
I think he had a little surgery the other week. I'm not sure if he'll play again this season, but you're totally spot on in terms of this. I mean, Beringame came on yesterday as a substitute. I think he came on for Gay, who was still carrying a knock, so he did 60 minutes. Gana didn't look very happy at being taken off, but you could see he was tiring. So Beringame is getting a bit of a shout, but again, give it him from the start. You know what you've got with Schneider, and unless he's had something going on in the background and his confidence has been wrecked and you're rebuilding his confidence. And that's the only thing I can think of as a reason for playing Schneiderlin now. He's had two decent games. He's not at the standard he was at last season yet, but he's certainly approaching back to normal for him. And we paid 20-odd million for that back to normal. He was a good player when he first came. If we can get him back to that level, great. Maybe they're looking at just getting him some game time so that somebody might want to take a punt on him and spend a bit of money on him. that's the only other reason I could think of playing a couple of these you know players like him. But you've got Calvert-Lewin's played it quite a number of games, but you know I'd still give him another couple of runs out near this end of the season. Let him finish strong. He's had a good season.
With Calvert-Lewin, I'd like to see him just give him some runs out up front, maybe even alongside Tosin. Because, you know, he came on in the derby and he played out left. And don't get me wrong, he put himself about and he played well. You know, but we need to be playing him, giving him Premier League experience as a striker, because that's where he is. He's a striker. He's not a left winger. So I think we need to, I completely agree that we need to give these youth players a chance, keep playing Calvert-Lewin, get Davies in the squad, get Beningame in the squad, get Vlasic in the starting lineup.
All three of them in the starting, four of them in the starting 11 at the end of the day. The thing is, he's trying to play Bolasie because Bolasie missed a lot of football, so he's getting Bolasie some game time in the hope that he'll be better for it next season. He's doing probably the same with Walcott. There was an interesting thing yesterday. Walcott has played something like 13 consecutive games for Everton, and that's his most consecutive games in 3 years. So there's an element of that with Walcott as well. Tosin's learning the Premier League, so he's got to play so that he can be better for next season.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's three of those. For me then, if you're going to play Beningame in midfield and Vlasic in the centre of midfield, it needs to be as part of a three, so Calvert-Lewin might not be able to play further up front. You may end up seeing Beningame sort of come on as a substitute instead. He's doing that with Schneiderlin. As I say, he's playing Schneiderlin to try and get him some more game time. For me, do you make Rooney a sub for these? There's only four games left. Make him a sub. Give him that sort of mentorship role where he's talking to the people on the bench about what he's seeing, because that was always something that Rooney was good at, even when he was a youngster. Was changing games from the bench. All right, it was with his pace and his skill, but it was also with his intelligence on where to be on the pitch. He is such a clever footballer. And there's stuff that people can learn from him by just being on the bench with him. You've got all those players there. John Joe Kenny, yeah, he's not featured for a while. Seamus Coleman is coming back from a bad injury, so you've probably got to play him for the rest of the season. Leighton Baines missed a few months as well, so I can't see him missing. And Michael Keane is needing the experience of being alongside Phil Jagielka at the moment, which leaves maybe Ramiro Funes-Mori as the odd person out, who's getting appearance.
Maybe next season. You know, what's our starting centre backs going to be? Is it going to be Jagielka? Because that's he's another year older then. And don't get me wrong, I like Jagielka, and I've liked Jagielka as long as he's been at Everton, because he does try hard and he puts an effort in that.
He's still quick enough to play at the back for us, to be honest. But but not with the current midfield. He's still our best defender at the end of the day.
It's just whether, you're planning for future, like when Jagielka's gone, because you don't know when he's going to lose that half yard of pace that he's... Do you give Keane a go with Mori? And, Funes Mori's Argentinian centre-back who, he plays alongside Otamendi in that when for Argentina. So I think if you give him a few games, you could get more out of him as well. Because he's just had an injury as well, so he needs the same sort of process of being brought back in into the mix.
Yeah, he does, but I don't know if there's a future for him next season. I don't know if he's fancied by the hierarchy. And this is it. There's so many questions at the end of the day. We don't know which of the current squad is gonna be there. We have got an article coming up on that. In fact, we're actually going to go through and on another podcast and start to go through the squad and talk about whether we, you know, go through them individually and talk about whether we keep them or get rid of them. But that's for another day. We don't know if there's going to be a new manager. We don't know if there's going to be a new director of football. We've got a pretty good idea that there's going to be a new chief executive because it seems that Robert Elston is going. So that's a lot, you know, and Elston, I think, gets involved in the financial side of the deals. So that's a lot of turnover in the management positions at the club. Allardyce is talking like he's planning for next season, but he also tellingly said the other day that he won't know in terms of how much is available at the end of the season until he's had a talk with the higher-ups, and that won't happen until the end of the season. So for me, you hear about what the Evertonians were. I've seen the videos of what was being sung to Allardyce, and you know, at the end of the day, he's the Everton manager. You don't still. I don't know. I didn't like it when Martinez was harangued out by people, and I'm not a massive fan of the verbal abuse that Allardyce was getting off some of the supporters. But I could also understand it because they've travelled a very long way to South Wales to see some dire football, and it's a lot of money that supporters have spent. Allardyce doesn't do himself any favours. Because all he talks about in his press conferences is about himself. He sounds like he's covering his back. If you've ever worked with anybody who covers the back constantly and talks about what they've achieved and things like that, that's Allardyce. He comes prepared with a load of statistics. He's not talking about Everton. He was asked the other day, is this been a disappointing season for Everton? And he said no. We've achieved the target I was set when I come in, which was to escape from relegation. And that's not what he was asked. Has this been a disappointing season for Everton? Well, yes, because we expected so much. We spent a ridiculous amount of money and we have seen some of the worst football to grace that pitch in the 120 years that we've been at Goodison Park. It's been dire. So for him to say that this season's been a success, it shows how absolutely tone deaf he is to the supporters. And that'll cost him in the end, because it cost him at West Ham as well. And he's an old dog. Is he capable of learning new tricks? Well, he's got 4 weeks to convince Evertonians.
No, the thing with Allardyce is it's very much he has a plan and he has planned subs and he doesn't seem to change the game. Like, he doesn't seem to make the subs to change the game, like what he's saying. You can pretty much, when the team comes out and you look at the bench, you can kind of go, right, on 60-ish minutes, he's going to take off X for Y. He's going to take off, you know, Calvert-Lewin. He's going to take off Palacio for Calvert-Lewin. You know that sub's going to happen, kind of thing. You know that he's going to take off Rooney for Beningame or whoever, or like you say, Gay for Beningame. He doesn't change the game to see what's actually happening in front of him. He has set subs.
If he does do it to react to something he's seen in front, it's not proactive, it's reactive. So, like yesterday, he stuck Funes Mori on and sent us to a back three, which was to shore up, basically, and make sure we got the point. So he's playing for a draw at the end of the day against a relegation-threatened side. Not giving us a chance by going further forward. Instead, he was, you know, three at the back plus, you know, two wing backs in Baines and Coleman.
Yeah. Coleman in the last couple of games has been unlucky with a couple of chances. There was the one where he just couldn't get his boot to it when Tosin, whether he headed across or went for the goal, I don't know, but Coleman was half a yard away from getting that. And, you know, yesterday's game, where he arrived, you know, he played the ball out wide and then he followed, makes the run into the centre of the box and he was unlucky to hit the bar.
Yeah, he was. Next season, we'll see the best of him at the end of the day.
Yeah. And it, you know, I think that's a good positive to end on, is that, you know, we have got some good players coming back in who, you know, who do want it and do, you know, you see his reaction, Coleman. He's our next captain, in my opinion. He knows what, like, this club means to Evertonians. He knows the passion side of things. And, you know, you could see in the derby, he was getting frustrated when he was missing, you know, when he missed that chance, he looked gutted. And, you know, he was proper up for it. And Coleman's, you know, one of the bright lights of this season, you know, getting him back in and getting him fit.
Absolutely. He's definitely got to be our next captain. God, I'd make him next manager right now. because he's got the drive that we need at Everton. We need him at the end of the day. And he's an example to other players on the pitch. So, yeah, absolutely. He's the future. You know, he's the future. But again, in 2 years' time, we're going to have to replace him. He's going to be 31 in a couple of years' time. So thankfully, we've got John Joe Kenny there. If we can keep him around for the next year or two, learning from him, then we'll have that natural succession at right back. And that's what you need throughout the club. I don't know if you saw the story. It was from the Mirror. And I've just got to bring this up, Chris, because the Mirror's not always known for its accuracy, let's be honest. Because Leighton Baines still hasn't signed for Man United. But they came out with a story that Allardyce and basically Allardyce and Steve Walsh are going to go. They also said Marcel Brands is going to come in, but that Mashiri is going to be linking with Mino Raiola, Romelu Lukaku's and Paul Pogba's agent. Now, that scared the life out of me. I think I tweeted about it in the morning. Now, this is a fellow who shafted it. Well, no, he didn't shaft Everton. Sorry. This is a fellow who was sorting out, I think it was Lukaku who changed his mind on the deal. But the thing that scares me is that when a club gets involved with an agent, the agent just sees the club as being a provider of money, and he would then suggest players to suit that club. Now, if you hear about the story about the Venkies when they took over Blackburn, and we know what a disaster that's been, there was a story about them getting involved with the agent Jerome Anderson. Now, they signed a lot of players who weren't good enough for their football club. And at the end of the day, they got a lot of players who weren't suitable, and they were all, you know, basically they were all clients of his at the end of the day. So it was a real contributing factor to the, because he was a major advisor to Venkies during that time. And it scares me that we might do the same with another agent, because agents at the end of the day, their interest is to look after the players, not the clubs. So I'd be very interested to see who would actually, you know, what sort of role Raiola would take in terms of his advice there. If it's just advice on getting deals done, great. But he should not be. He should not be our director of football. He shouldn't be. We shouldn't be just signing clients of Raiola to populate our side. At the end of the day, you know, we need a proper football man who is a director of football, who is going to build a squad for us at the end of the day. Having said that, some of the players that Raiola represents, apart from Paul Pogba, you've got Mario Balotelli. You've got Mbaye Niang, who was at Watford a couple of years ago. Justin Kluivert, Patrick's son. That lad Narsing, who played there very well for Swansea yesterday. As well as Marco Verratti and Blaise Matuidi, who are both a couple of players I'd love to see in an Everton shirt, to be fair. But yeah, I'm just very, very wary about an agent having that much involvement in a club. What's your thoughts, Chris?
Yeah, like you say, football agents are out for one thing, and that that is the players and also themselves, you know, because if they make the players happy and get them a good transfer deal or a good new contract, they get, you know, a million in their back pocket or a couple of million in their back pocket, depending on, you know, the transfer fee, etc.
Or Ross Barkley's getting, what, 7.5? 7.5, 8 million?
Yeah, and that's what the agents are there for. They're purely there to make the players more money, make themselves money. Like I say, they don't care about the football clubs. Like, if he was to be linked with the club, and he was to, like say, give advice on deals or, you know, make recommendations on other players, not his own players, you know, that may be okay, but I don't like the idea of being linked with one agent.
Even then, he's not in a position to make recommendations on a footballing basis.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of being linked to one agent. You know, if Raiola comes in and he brings his top clients with him, then yeah, we'd be happy, obviously. Because he has got some of the better players on his roster. But if he comes in and he just gives us his mediocre part of the roster, it's not worth it. I don't like the idea of it.
It's just not how a good football club operates in my book. At the end of the day, if they're just having a chat with him on about how you know, cementing deals and things like that, because Robert Elston's going, they, you know, Mashiri might want to have that knowledge, have a little bit more knowledge, maybe perhaps be a bit more hands-on this summer, in terms of the actual deal-breaking side of things, because Bill Kenwright's stepping back, and Bill Kenwright, he's got a lot of stick from a lot of people over the years for various reasons. I'm not going into that. Can't be bothered. But what he has done is he's done very well in terms of the actual negotiating contracts and deals with clubs, like the Lescott contract, for example, the Lescott deal with Manchester City. He really did manage to bleed some more money out of them for that. And negotiating with Chelsea for Romelu Lukaku, he did very well in getting what ended up being a very good deal for the club. So he stepped back, and there's rumours that he's, as I say, he's finishing up this season anyway. So I guess next week, Chris, it's Newcastle, and a Monday night match, and it's just the ski slopes at the end of the season. So yeah, we just want to see the younger players being given a bit of an opportunity. We want to see a bit of attacking football. You know, three chances a game isn't enough, is it, Chris?
No. I've renewed my season ticket, but I don't pay my money to go and watch us defend. I go and watch us put on a performance. I want to go to be entertained. I don't want to go and be like, oh, we've just managed to squeeze a goal and then we've sat back for 80 minutes or whatever. Don't want to see that. you know, and for me, and then I'm sure we'll talk about this in another podcast, but for me, Allardyce is not the answer in terms of taking Everton and going like forward in the future. He was brought in to do a specific task. He's done it. Let's pay him off at the end of the season, start again.
Yeah. We're apparently 1 point for him being mathematically safe from relegation. So I think once we've achieved that, you know, if that's the decision that's getting made, then that might be the time that we might see that decision.
Yeah.
But we do need to see some leadership at the end of the day from the very top of the club on a direction for the future.
For me, if they're going to get rid of him, they need to be announcing that, like you say, as soon as we're safe. And we need to also be announcing the new manager before the World Cup starts. In fact, pretty much as soon as the season finishes, because he's going to need to get time to come into the club and see what we've got. And then he's going to have to, you know, make the negotiations on what players he wants.
Absolutely.
Well, we'll go through that in the other podcast.
Yeah, we've got another podcast to do on the Allardyce and new manager situation, as well as looking at the futures of all the people who are at the football club, really. So, anything more you want to say on the Swansea and Liverpool games, Chris?
No, I'm done with those two games.
Fair enough. Fantastic. Well, look out later on this week, everyone, because we'll have an article out for you. We'll have our weekly transfer podcast as well, where we look at all the transfer rumours. So don't forget, keep following us. We're on, first of all, our website, www.thestreetend.com. You'll find us on Twitter, @thestreetend. You'll find us on Facebook. Just look us up on there as well. We've got a Facebook page there. And subscribe. Please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. Thanks to those of you who've rated and reviewed us as well. It does go a long way for us. I will mention your name separately on another podcast. So thanks a lot, guys. And let's hope for it. A little bit more of an exciting end to the season. Okay, until next time, Blues. See you later. Cheers now. We'll be right back.